Attention everyone, this is an emergency broadcast. The loud frequency coming from your radio is not a mistake. Do not turn off your radio, but instead turn up your radio as loud as it can go. Do this so we can broadcast this frequency as loud as possible.
And welcome everybody to another episode of Game Stuff. I'm your gaming gal, Kalai. For those that are new to this podcast, we are a conversational podcast by gamers, for gamers, about games. So, before we get into our show, which this week's topic is all about video game artists, let me introduce who we have with us today. We have Roberto in the house, the birthday boy himself. What's up, Roberto, and happy birthday.
Thank you. It seems I am now permitted to gather higher level items and vehicles at level 30 in this RPG. So, it's pretty good.
Did your ability to hold things also expand?
Yeah, I might be needing a new inventory slot though, a new inventory pack, because it's up there, especially with the games that are now rapidly building in my backlog at this time. So, it's like that's, I gotta tell you, word of advice as a reviewer and all that, it's nice to get free games, but when they pile on, yeah, it can be like
it's rough,
like,
right?
it's like a combination between being like having fun and being happy, but painfully happy. Like, I don't know, being sick on your day off from school. Like, you're sick, but you're off from school. So, something like that. That's a good metaphor.
Now, before we get into what we've been playing, just some housekeeping. Please subscribe and rate us. Also, you can check out our Twitter account. It's at GameStuffCast. You can search us on Facebook at GameStuffPodcast. And, of course, we do have a Patreon page. It's patreon.com/provengamer. So, Roberto, what are you playing this week? Anything good?
Oh, yeah. One game I can reveal is because it's been released, so a game I have been playing is a dungeon RPG from NIS America called...
I love NIS America. Ooh, what have you been playing, man?
Labyrinth of Refrain. I forgot the subtitle, but it's called Labyrinth of Refrain. It's a brand new dungeon RPG from some pretty experienced DRPG makers. Thanks to the generosity of NIS America, I've been playing the game, and I think I need a little more time to do a proper review so I can do, like, consider this an impressions type of saying of sorts. It's a great game. It's a very good game. Right now it's a slow burner, like most RPGs are, but as it goes on, it's actually getting pretty good. So Labyrinth of Refrain takes place in a mystical, slightly, you know, kind of old-fashioned yet 1800s-inspired world full of witchcraft, wizardry, but also modern life. There's some kind of a labyrinth that exists deep underneath the city. It's said to hold great power, untold riches, and you're not even a character, really. You're not even the first thing you see, there's a wizard, and she's trying to use one of her companions to try and get into the lair. But it turns out you're actually a soul trapped within a book. And then the wizard, the woman, is actually using you and your magic to power her little doll soldiers to get into the labyrinth, because it's poisonous for humans. So it's a typical DRPG, first-person exploration and item gathering, also managing your party and also combating monsters. About a couple of hours in, I'm going to probably keep finding a little bit more than give you like a final impressions next week. But it's really good. I love the music. It's English voice acting and English subtitles. So if you're looking for a neat adventure, that's looking to be one right now. My only other DRPG I've played is Rage Agon, and from the Bandai Namco. And that's pretty good. I like that one. And for anyone who doesn't know what DRPG stands for any of our new listeners, that's Dungeon RPG. So you're in a dungeon and there's monsters at random, and there's items and loot to collect. So pretty neat stuff. So I've been working on that. Now, also, I've been working on the one super-duper popular game that you haven't stopped hearing about, Spider-Man. So,
I was wondering if you were playing that.
Yes, I bought that on Thursday night before it came out. And I'd have to say, like, you've heard what you've heard already. But if I can try and throw in my own personal account, the reason why, for me, this game is a celebration. It's a celebration of Spider-Man in our lives, Spider-Man in our media, Spider-Man in comic books, films, and even cartoons. I grew up playing, seeing the Spider-Man cartoon on Fox Kids, and also, and that meant a lot. But I was also somebody who witnessed a very, terrible moment in history, where Spider-Man would become to see as a different kind of an icon. Around the late, like, early thousands, I think in 2001, I forgot what movie I was seeing, and that's when I saw the Tobey Maguire trailer for the first Spider-Man movie. And the trailer infamously involved bank robbers jumping out into a bank, guns drawn, escaping by helicopter, but then a giant wad coming in and enveloping the helicopter. Then one of the guys gets knocked out. When he comes to, he's actually webbed up between the World Trade Center. And as you know, several months later, that terrible day in September happened and everything changed. With our identity of hero and heroism changed completely. The movie was pushed back and also edited. And when the movie finally came out, in that moment, Spider-Man encompassed not just a hero, but a measure of what heroes defined and the fact that that's defined by choices and the weight of those choices. The movie was great, you know, Tobey Maguire, the music, the visuals, you know, James Franco as Osborn, Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin. But between the imagery used in that movie and the amazing song that it used from Chad Kroeger, that Spider-Man became like written into everybody who witnessed that as one of not just one of the greatest movies ever, but a beloved icon of the city of New York. And so when I'm playing, so many decades later, I've seen all the movies, I've seen the shows, I've seen all sorts of stuff. When I'm playing the game, it feels like it has that powerful moment there, you know, where Spider-Man this is not just a game, it's an experience. And you feel that this is a hero that has meant so much to so many people, myself included, and they finally do him right. Not saying the other games were crud, because the PS2 games are actually pretty good.
And no, he's saying they're crud.
No, well, especially the 2005 one. That's what this game was based off of, the 2005 Spider-Man 2 game where you can swing open world. I think, like, some people hated Edge of Time, which came out in 2012 or something like that, but that was actually an okay game. But this one was just, it feels exciting. The swinging is perfect. I can't imagine another traversal system. The combat, the music, the visuals, the sensation of being in New York City, or at least a slightly condensed version of it, is phenomenal. And I'm still working on the game, about like 20% through, but it's wonderful. And quite frankly, everybody who has a PS4 should get it. And I can confirm, yes, Stan the Man himself has a cameo appearance in here. Where and when? You'll know what it is. I'm just going to leave it at
that. Oh my God, really?
Excelsior. Stan. Yep.
Wow.
Excelsior! So, yeah. Oh, it's probably one of his best cameo appearances ever, just so you know. But anyways, and then just wrapping it up a little bit, wrapping up the tail end of my games this week. Warhammer 40,000K Inquisitor, Martyr, a game we talked about before. It's actually pretty good on PS4. A little bit of a downgrade with presentation, but controls, gameplay, music are all great. I love playing that. I was actually going to jam to that a little bit when I got home from work. I'll jam to that after the show's over, of course. Another game, God Eater Resurrection, for the PlayStation Vita and PS4. It's based off the anime manga. Well, actually, it was a game. Then they made an anime manga off of it. Or it might have been based off the manga. But in any case, God Eater is about, in the near future, these organisms called Aragami come in. and they have this highly evolved cell structure. So they're giant monsters, but they keep regenerating and they can survive and take so many forms. So you're a god eater. You have been genetically engineered, well, altered to wield giant weapons that can turn to guns to slay the Arigami. And I started it like last year and I stopped. But now that I have I bought a second Vita at PAX East and I have a 16 gigabyte memory card. So I've been playing that a lot, and it's great on the go. Phenomenal on the go. Feels like a PS3 game on the go. And then it has cross-save data, so then I can just upload the data and play on the PS4. So phenomenal game. Lots of action, interesting monster hunting, and all that stuff. So that was pretty cool. And, yeah, really neat. And then lastly, we'll go into the Switch, because I know you like the Switch.
I do like the Switch.
played an Implosion. Implosion Never Lose Hope, which was that mech anime inspired action game. I played more into The Breach, which I mentioned last week or 2 weeks ago. Got further this time. That was tough. I got my butt kicked. Like, this is the kind of game you can start up, I'm gonna play a game for a little bit. I know it's gonna be tough, but the game will just kick your butt like in the first 5 minutes, and then you're gonna want to delete the game off your Switch. But other times it's like, okay, this is cool, I'm a badass, I saved the island, I saved the peoples. And Paladins Champions, so the free-to-play first-person shooter. That's actually really cool and fun to play. And actually, that's it, because the other game I'm playing right now, I still can't talk about until launch. And then I just got two other Switch games that I'll be doing more impressions of by next week. And that actually look pretty cool, so... I will say they both exist already in other platforms, but we'll keep it at that. So yeah, that wraps it up. What about you, Kalai?
Okay, well, before we get into what I've been playing, I just want to note the fact that Matt isn't here, because I think he's come down with the plague. So hopefully he'll be here next week when he no longer has the plague.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's not even like a cold, guys. It's like, it's the kind of plague that affects your eyes. Yeah, so like... It's like a cold. Yeah, you can do, you know, we can do this on a cold, or if you have like, you know, or even maybe not if you have the runs, but if you have a cold, you know, you can do that. But this is the kind that like it like affects your eyes. And actually, I did. My sister had that happen many years ago when we went on a trip somewhere, and you have to take antibiotics to get it out and stuff. But but yeah, he's doing okay, and the baby's fine. That's the most important part.
Yes, the baby's still alive. I mean, and we'll update everybody on that.
Like, you know, hopefully nothing mutagenic comes from this, you know? So, but in any case.
Let's go into what I've been playing.
Of course.
I picked up my Switch, and I didn't play Monster Hunter. I actually played SteamWorld Dig 2, and I beat that game this weekend.
Great. Okay, those guys are amazing, by the way. I met Barjan. He's like one of the big heads over there, and it's just a nice, cool, fun, chill like company. And they made some great games. SteamWorld Dig, I'm still working on the first one, but SteamWorld Heist, that's a game you want. It's XCOM but 2D in a very fascinating space steampunk world, and like. In some cases, like with the combat, you could actually like ricochet bullets off of like the walls and strike your target behind cover.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I also got to play a little bit more Hollow Knight. I'm a little stuck in that game. I'm having trouble. Like, I'm getting lost, and to me, it gets a little frustrating.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same with Axiom Verge. I started that, and it's like I got lost, and it's like I need to. Sadly, I need to look at a video. To take a look. Oh, that's another game I'm playing, but okay, we'll get to it. I'll let you finish off your thought. I got one more game to mention, but I'll let you finish your thought.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Now, I also played a little bit more of the, I'm blanking. The Shakedown Hawaii prequel, the first game.
City Rampage.
City Rampage. That one's a little, like... I like the game, but it's not like my top favorite game. Like, I'd rather play other stuff.
Right,
it's just
like
hard
one
for
of
me
those,
to get into it.
It's like one of those things you play for a couple minutes and you stop and then you get back into it, because it's just like it's 8-bit, but it's fun. But it's not something like you see yourself playing all the time. Doesn't mean it's a bad game. It's just you know, I totally understand that.
Yeah. And updated Nintendo got back to me today on my Pokemon DS as it just stopped working. And it's under manufacturer warranty, so I sent it in. And Nintendo's like, yeah, this isn't manufacturer. You must have done something. You have to pay for it. I'm like, damn it. So because it's a special edition DS, I absolutely, absolutely, like, had to have it repaired.
Wow.
So
that stinks. I got lucky with my PS2 repairs, yeah. But, like, even I had a fat PS3, and I didn't get lucky with. It was out of warranty, and just, I had a game disc in there. It was Call of, now I remember, it was 2010, I had Call of Juarez in that thing, and the fat PS3s, the thing is, there was some kind of thermal paste or thermal insulator that was real cheaply made, so it would overheat, and then I had the Yellow Light of Doom. I had to drive an hour and a half to Denville, New Jersey, get it repaired, I got it repaired, I brought it back, it lasted like a week, and then it still had that again. So I had to go back up, and it was a warranty repair, and I was fine. I was like, I gotta get rid of this shit. So as much as I love my fat PS3 and the PS2 backwards compatibility, it's gonna happen again, and I don't want to do this. I mean, there's other repair shops now that I know of in the area. At the time, that was the only one that I knew of. So I got rid of it. I turned it into digital press, and then I got a PS3 Slim, the second model PS3 Slim, and then everybody's happy. Hooray.
Yep. But that's pretty much all I've been playing because I've been pretty much relaxing as I'm still fighting this stupid ear infection. In fact, I had to go to the doctors again today because apparently I have flute behind my ear, so I can't hear on my right ear.
I've had ear infections before, but not that bad.
Yeah, this is pretty bad. The doctor told me, she was like, "Oh, it could take up to like 3 weeks for you to get that clogged feeling out of your head." I was like, "What?"
Oh, that like, sucks.
Or we could just give you some steroids. I'm like, give me the steroids.
Take the easy way out. Yeah, the direct way, not the long way.
So let's jump over now to our topic of the show.
I had two things to tell you. Two things.
All right.
Two things.
Hurry up.
Yeah, we just barely started. Okay, no. I thought about you. I meant to share this on the group chat, but I'll probably share this after we film. Okay, there's a very cool YouTuber who was formerly an animator on Fairly Odd Parents. He worked with Butch Hartman. But he makes video game animations. His name is Jeremy Chinsu. And his YouTube handle is Terminal Montage. I mention him because there's three cartoons he made of Monster Hunter World that I think you're going to find hilarious. So I'm going to share that with you when the show is done. But everybody else, please look this guy up. He made some cool Mario cartoons. And
that's cool.
And also the other game I meant to I have to mention this, though. It's important because this actually is a pretty good thing. Okay, so there's actually another game that came out for the Switch, PS4, and Vita, and Xbox that I would recommend everybody to play. But also, if anybody needs, you know, a game with a positive message, it's called Stay. STAY, it's an acronym. It was actually on PC for a time, and it just got released to all the other systems. So Stay is an interactive, like, puzzle visual novel type game where the player interacts with somebody who's been captured. It's not a wartime situation. This is a regular guy down the dumps, going day by day. Wakes up at 4 in the morning hearing something and gets whacked. And suddenly he finds himself in a rotten, decaying room. And there's a computer that's turned on. And somehow it reaches you. And you have to help this guy make decisions to get himself out of there. But every decision you make has a consequence, including logging out of the game. So if you shut the game down because, you know, you got to go to bed or you got to go to work, that's going to have consequences. So this is a game with decisions that happen all the time that have consequence, and also puzzle solving. I mention this because the game actually deals with things like mental illness, depression, anxiety, but it's not something that beats you down and makes you feel sad or mopey. It gives you a strong degree of hope. everything you collect has some kind of a meaning to it. You know, like at one point he figures out a puzzle and a kitty cat shows up, and you know, and you know, like it depends on which cat you get, because I got like a bad one, but he's like, oh well, you know, statistically, you know, and it's like his wording, it feels like not relatable, but it feels like genuine. You know, he's like, you know, man, I don't know what to do, but there's a cat here, and I know that 30, you know, 30, if you have a cat, you're 30% less likely to get a stroke or suffer any kind of anxiety attack. And, you know, this, I feel like kind of relaxed when this cat's looking at me. And then the cat kind of can, you know, joins him for the rest of the thing, the game. And then, you know, he's trying to figure out, you know, oh man, what do I like, but it's not a case of like, what do I do all the time? It's a case of, he mentions like facts about himself or facts about this, that. He makes like little jokes and puns. It's actually pretty cool. So, in the game, like the game, I'd highly recommend. I'm almost done, so I'll probably give you like another review, so to speak, over here when I'm done. It has 7 possible endings, and it's on everything. So I wanted to mention that. I just totally blanked out about that. So I apologize. Okay, but let's move on. Now we can move on to the topic of discussion. Thank you for letting me get that out.
No problem. All right, first of all, I want to thank Molly from our Facebook group for giving us this topic of the show. We appreciate your input, and we're going to discuss it today on the show because we here at the GameStuffCast, we value and love all of the input you guys give us. So, who are some of your favorite video game artists? Why is art direction important in the gaming industry? What game has your favorite art style? So I figured this is a great one for you, Roberto, because I know you are really into the indies and the art scene and stuff.
Yeah, so one of my weaknesses is that I can like identify the art style in certain games, but in terms of like the actual person, sometimes like that eludes me. Like I can tell you right from the get-go, I know Yoji Shinkawa from Metal Gear Solid, and then Tetsuya Nomura from Kingdom Hearts, but then again, he's more of a director, not, you know, a creative director, not exactly the, like, an artist, but I can identify the what I know. So we'll start with that. Yoji Shinkawa, I actually wrote a paper comparing him to Picasso back in college. And I don't know where that paper is, but it was a tough one because my art professor, what's his video game? I don't know what video game is. What's his game? What's his video? What's his Yoji Shinkawa? What's his Metal Gear? Snake! Anyway, but I mentioned that because Picasso had like especially with the Cubism era, had a very surreal way of art styles. And even like what, you know, like depicting live scenes. Everyone knows, like, for example, one of Picasso's famous paintings is Guanaco, which is there was this terrible conflict involving just absolute, what's that word? Atrophy? Yeah, atrophy. Just death and destruction everywhere. And it was done in a very surreal type of a style that not many people, like, you know, artists at the time were doing. But I mentioned that comparison because Yoji Shinkawa, it wasn't necessarily surreal, but it, like when you look at the cover art, but in a sense it was, because it's like it's an illustration, but it uses a lot of negative space. So for example, my most famous, like for me, the what I think of immediately is the cover to Metal Gear Solid 2, because it has a red and white box there, and then it has an image of Snake illustrated in like a gunmetal gray with a lot of negative space. So like it's not his skin tone, it's like where his skin would be is white, and he's holding the M9 silencer, the handgun that he uses in the beginning of the game. And it, to me, I felt like it accentuated like a sense of emotion and excitement, I guess, if you will, in a way that kind of Picasso did. I'm not saying looking at Guanaco is exciting, but Guernica, that was it. Oh my God, I'm saying Guernica, so Guanaco. But that was Guernica. That was the name of it. And like I'm looking at it right now, and I feel that once again, if you look at Guernica, and you look at that cover, there's like a sense of like there's a sense of a connection with the negative space. So I wrote like a whole thing about that, and I was proud of myself because I compared two completely different mediums from hundreds of years. One's in video games, one's in, you know, ancient history from Europe, and I managed to find comparisons, and she liked it. So the professor liked it, so yeah, for me. But back to my bottom line with that, I feel that kind of art style was used because it was to highlight a sense of mystery, a sense of urgency, a sense of energy, a kind of making these characters like larger than life, almost like gods even, because the actions of what Raiden, Solid Snake, Otacon, what they do affects the entire world, and not anybody even knows what they're even up to. So that was pretty cool.
I was gonna say some of my favorite artists are, now I'm not very big into following artists, so I actually had to look these guys up based off the games that I liked. Ishai Takahashi and Masatsugo Sayata, who did the art for Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Mm-hmm. I like that anime art style. Also, the art directors Brian Martel and Jennifer Wilds, who did the art style for Borderlands, because I just love that art style for Borderlands.
Yeah, and another thing about Borderlands is that was actually a bit of a controversy. Well, not a bad one, but just something to note. I remember back when Borderlands wasn't even out yet, but I remember when it was announced. Game Informer had this big cover, and it was like a Mad Max-ish looking. It was a buggy, and there was like the guys with the red eyes, and they had guns, and it was like the Game Informer magazine was just, you couldn't help but just like, holy crap, this looks awesome. You know, billions of guns. Like, I remember the headline, Borderlands, billions of guns, an epic treasure hunt, all this stuff. And the trailer was like something completely different. If you look at the original trailer, you'll see a realistic looking game, like something out of, say, Gears of War. And then they did, I don't know how they did it, considering the size of the game, they flipped the switch on the art style. They said, we're going to go to a different art style because at this time in 2008, I feel, a lot of the games were kind of becoming like pseudo-realistic, or even the sci-fi games had a realistic art style to it, you know, or realistic like interpretation.
Right.
Resistance 2 had a realistic interpretation, a believable interpretation. Halo, I know it's sci-fi, but it wasn't cartoony. It felt grounded in reality. So the point is, they said, we're going to go with cel-shaded. And people said, you know, oh, I don't know. I mean, it looks like a cartoon, and everything's going cel-shaded at that point, like Killer 7 and a bunch of other games at the time. But it paid off, because now everybody, you know, Borderlands turned out to be one of the greatest games ever made, spawned several installments, including Tales of the Borderlands, has an art style that everybody tries to cosplay and design and do this and do that. And, you know, hopefully we're going to get a third one soon. And, yeah, so that was a really, that's a case of risk-taking that paid off immensely, despite, opposition.
Yeah, which brings us to the second question, which is, why is art direction important in the gaming industry? And that's a great example, because it moves it forward, and it gives us different styles. And that art style can pull you into a game, can memorize you. I mean, if you don't like that art style, if you don't like the look of the game, I'm not going to play a game.
Right. Exactly. Like, if it looks ugly or not immersive. Like, one thing, going back on that, I'll bring up from college. This isn't, it's sort of related to what we're talking about. Regrettably, I don't remember the professor's name, and I don't remember what else, like some details, but at school back at Stockton University, they used to have like random, come to this event and hear this person speak, and here's free pizza. So it was a great place to get free food, right? So here's what happened. So there was this this meeting, and the meeting involved using graphic novels and comic books to better describe or educate people about the Holocaust. Now, we happen, the school is famous for having the MOG, which is called the MAHG. It's the Masters of Holocaust and Genocide Studies. And there's a whole small, like, mini campus inside the library where you can learn about it. And also, it's open to all majors. So they really promote that. And I remember this guy demonstrated several graphic novels that detailed really, you know, gruesome, of course, you know, genocides that's happened throughout the years. But it was done in the graphic novel, like, almost Marvel DC style. There was one about Kosovo. And there was, like, a big, you know, the big genocide over there in the early 90s. There was another one about Rwanda, the Rwandan genocide that happened in the 90s. And it was a little bit weird at first because it's like, I'm like, I associate this so hard with, like, a comic book, you know, superheroes and stuff. But at the same time, the illustrations and how they're done was, like, enough to where I was like, you know what, if someone stuck this in front of me, I'd read it, you know? So I bring that up because, like you just said, the art style has to have a meaning to the narrative and a meaning to the storytelling as well. Telltale, as you know, is known for their story-driven games.
Telltale's another good one, yeah,
and
you're right.
They adapt the cel-shaded style for The Wolf Among Us and...
You know what that really worked for? Batman.
Right,
the Batman
exactly.
series, because it made it feel more of a comic book feel. And that's another great example of how, you know, art direction is very important when it comes to the gaming industry. How, you know, you can feel like you're actually in a comic book.
And even like the, if not even just the cel shaded, just the aesthetic, like your eyes can feel something. I was playing Tearaway, for example, on PS Vita, which is from Media Molecule, the guys that made Little Big Planet. And Tearaway, the whole world is made of paper. But you feel, almost with your eyeballs, as strange as it is, this what kind of paper and the sense of paper. There's scraps of paper, the little scrap enemies. There's construction paper, cardboard, newspaper, foam core, and they're all like weird, fascinating creatures made out of paper that you fight with, that join you, that enhance the whole experience. And it's just it's a way to kind of plug in that case, in the case of that game, it's a way to plug into childlike imagination. Like we all played with construction paper or colored things or cut things out in kindergarten, first grade, second grade. And those were basic creative skills to have. So they were very important for being able to build those motor skills. Also, the same could be applied to even Little Big Planet, which had a little bit more of like a filled out like kind of a feeling. Because as you know, there's Sackboy and it's not really about paper anymore. It's about, you know, more constructed things. Sackboy is made out of beads and he's like, you know, what else? Wait. Okay. This would be an embarrassing question, but when you're at a barbecue and they have those little pillows and you throw them into the beanbags, right? Yeah, that's what they call beanbags. When you know, everything in Little Big Planet like has a beanbag feeling. Okay, I don't know why I forgot that. I'm sorry.
I'm like, little pillow? That's something you put on a chair? I'm like...
Right, the beanbags. You hold the beanbags and then, you throw it into the hole.
The beanbag toss.
Beanbag toss, yep. I have no idea how I forgot that. But yeah, that's another great example. And I think that, once again, just to answer that question, it plugs into the need to construct, the need to play, the need to create, which is, you know, something that is really extremely important today. When you hear about, it's always, you know, heartbreaking when you hear like a school system is cutting back their art program or after school program. And I can't stress enough the ability to teach others, whether it's your own kids or somebody else, the need to continuously draw, create, slap things together, and try make something work. That's how the engineers of the future are built. How about you, Kalai?
I was thinking of the Nintendo games like Paper Mario.
Yeah.
And the Mario games and how they bring back a childlike innocence just looking at that art style. I mean, I just remember what it's like, you know, originally playing the original Super Mario Brothers, which was 8-bit. Now we have Mario Odyssey, which, you know, is just so more 3D and more experiencing, and you feel like you're being pulled into that world because of that art style.
Right, so. And then moving forward, it's not even just about style, I think color is a very important part. So what I think of is the people at Vanillaware over Atlas and Sega that have made games like Muramasa Rebirth, that made Dragon's Crown Pro, and also my personal favorite, and I still have to finish this. I haven't finished it yet. I feel embarrassed for not finishing it. Odin Sphere.
Now, oh yeah, now, I have that. I have to start that.
Right. Those games, not only is the combat great, visually they're beautiful. They actually paint the colors. Like, I don't know how you do digital painting. And I see this on DeviantArt.com and Fur Affinity, like how they can digitally ink something. I don't know how or what brush strokes you use, if you're using a different program. I would love to learn how to do that one day, just because I could just go wild and crazy with it. But they actually color and ink their characters so they look like Renaissance paintings. Dragon's Crown in particular had a little bit of controversy from people who get easily offended because the body proportions in that game are exaggerated.
I have a problem with that. And the only reason why I have a problem with that is that they make the barbarian look like she has the biggest legs possible, like the thickest thighs, and they shade them red on the inside, so it's like she's chafed. I feel bad for her. Like, the woman needs some Vaseline between her legs, man.
Right. And then also the witch. They had a witch in there that was very, oh yeah. I guess, not to be crude here, but you could call her the boob witch.
Yeah.
But the advantage was, but the thing is, with that art style is, they were trying to encapsulate creating larger than life figures, like kind of what we do with comic books today, and we give them crazy proportions, and we give them, you know, all sorts of different powers and things like that, and you know, to try and distinguish them from the other characters in a story, but also to confer, like, give them that identity of being that larger than life figure. Like, for example, not to go too off topic, but Superman, in the 1990s cartoon series, Superman has like, Bruce Timm did, you know, he did the Batman animated series. Superman has like the widest chest ever. He has like his in the cartoon, he has like a face that looks like a box. His chest looks like a box, and then like nothing. Like, he doesn't even, you know, forget about that ass though. There's no ass there. He just, you know, like, everything's up here. And, you know, and some could say, what's the deal with that? You know, and because then there's other characters who have perfectly fine proportions, like Livewire and even Parasite. And the purpose is not just kind of sensation. You know, Superman, he's strong. What do you think of strength? You think of his biceps, you think of his chest, you think of lifting. You know, do you even lift, bro? And you think of, you know, that S, the that stands for hope, and how that image should stand to empower. Like, you don't want to give him a weak chest and or a flimsy little chest. You want, like, that's the symbol of strength that the eye sees. So mm-hmm. It's disproportionate, but it's done so to exemplify the power of the Man of Steel. Even though, mm-hmm. you know, but anyway, moving forward.
Just like colors are very important, in my opinion, to the actual game, because that color palette can really set the tone of the game. Like, if you're in a game that's a darker, scarier game, you want darker palette tones. Whereas if I'm in, like, a Mario, I want happier, colorful tones.
Right, so, like, even going back to Dragon's Crown, the color tones are, like, the Italian Renaissance oil paintings, the way right. they show, like, to exemplify that your crew are like gods almost, and you're fighting evil and you're going on quests. So that's where, like, I really love how they decided to go crazy with the character design and even the artistic direction, and it makes it feel like a fairy tale.
Moving forward, why don't we jump into our Facebook group?
I have one more thought. Like, I want to close it out. It doesn't feel... I want to transition and segue. I like that. It makes it feel like a little more...
I thought you were throwing me the transition. You were, like, moving on, so I went with it.
No, but...
Ugh, you just tossed me a ball. And well, took good. It back.
It's good to be unpredictable. But in any case, I would highly, like, just based upon, like, everything I've seen at PAX, E3, and other games. That's one of the wonderful things about the industry. We get to see how creators see their world and how they see the world they want to express. You have to remember, the wildest thing about all this is that none of this existed before. These games never existed before. You know, they were just imaginations in someone's brain, in someone's heart, mind, someone's inner universe of thinking and nerves and things like that. And all sorts of different things have to happen within the mind of somebody, within the heart of somebody, for it to, for an idea to happen. And once you get that idea to go, then you just go. Sonic, Mario, Crash, Spyro, Master Chief, Nathan Hale from Resistance, BioShock. They were all ideas. They were all just wild ideas about what would a game be. And these individuals, using the power of what we have today, the modern instruments in this universe, they took something from their universe and made it real. Rapture, the Mushroom Kingdom, the world of Uncharted and Xanadu, even the world of Spider-Man, you know, and Warhammer, especially Warhammer with all the lore that's involved. And that takes a huge, and especially even Fallout, that takes a huge degree of respect, a huge imagination, and it all begins with a single thought and a single idea. I encourage anybody out there, don't give that up. Something I actually have discovered myself is that I gave up on some of the stuff for like the last 3 years because I haven't been able to find anything. But now I'm like getting the itch to get back into drawing and just sketching characters, sketching things like that. And not even just, they may never work in a video game, but just to have that itch, keep going because you never know where that's going to land. But really, for every artist and programmer and designer out there, everyone from SteamWorld Heist to Vostok Inc., I respect you. Keep up the good fight. And I'll be be playing and tuning in. Okay, now we can segue.
Okay, let's go to our Facebook group. Andrew says, some of my favorite artists are Fumihide Okoye and Masuki Hashimoto from Shining Force 2, Matt Goldman from Jade Empire, John Gallagher and Marcia Topher from Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, respectively, Jan Bart Van Beek for Horizon Zero Dawn, Eric Barone from Stardew Valley. Got the names from the wiki pages, so they are just lead artists. But mm-hmm. These art styles have always been a small but integral part to game draw.
Right.
Not in a needs to be 4K graphics at 60 frames cents, as this doesn't make or break 90% of the games. But as it does, this aesthetic match what games is trying to do and how it's trying to tell the story. Story, dialogue, voice acting, and art direction are all three of the four legs that make up the chair called gaming, the fourth obviously being gameplay. So if any of those legs are weak, your chair gets a bit wobbly. Molly.
That's a great answer.
Molly.
Yeah. Because like the other thing to take into consideration even is that, are we entering the age where everything's just getting so retro and so pixelated and like everybody wants to just go that style now? One thing that's been happening that people are getting excited for is that people are starting to emulate the two-dimensional, low-polygon look of PlayStation games. And that's actually been pretty cool because now people are starting to, like, you know, remember the PS1 era when you know, graphics weren't even graphics. They were just polygons and you had to slap polygons together. I actually want to try and do that. There was an artist out there that, like, did, like, a two-dimensional sprite of, like, one of her OCs or personas or something. And it's, like, I'm like, this looks like something you could see in a PS1 game. That's cool. So it's interesting, like, just to see, like, the thought process of which thing is going to match. Anyways, what's the next one? Thank you for the answer.
Okay, yeah. So Molly apparently uploaded every single person she follows on Twitter, so I have to go through these one at a time because they're pictures.
Oh, man.
Alex Konstead.
Mm-hmm.
We have James Pekeek. He's the founder of Scribblepad Studios.
Nice, okay.
Aaron Liminick, a concept artist for Naughty Dog.
Yeah.
John Sweeney, art director working at Naughty Dog.
Yep.
Naughty Dog's a good company.
Oh, of course, yeah. And then, you know, with everything that's happening with Uncharted, even Last of Us, so we'll have to wait and see how it all transpires.
Eaton Zena, concept artist for Naughty Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Wojciech Fus, freelance concept artist. Sony Pictures. Raphael Lactos, art director of Assassin's Creed. That's another good one.
Yeah, that's one we totally missed. Yeah. I guess we can just briefly mention that. That's an interesting depiction because it's in its context of realism and historical context, the fact that you're trying to recreate a world, but also an interesting paradigm of something that's taking place in the present versus something hundreds of years in the past with the Animus. The smaller games, those like those Chronicles, had a more fleshy art style. Like the Assassin's Creed China had strokes, like, you know, big brushes, like when you swiped your sword and stuff. And back in Stockton, they said that, like, in Asia, especially Japan, if you're drawing something and you got, like, and let's say you got a big crayon in your hand and you're, like, mashing that crayon in there and you've seen chunks of that crayon go off, they love that. That was, like, a really highly respectful thing to do because it meant that the hand, which is this crazy machine built by nature that's been engineered for billions of years, is able to draw and make something with the mind. Like, they love seeing the hands leave marks in its creation on the page. Anyway, okay, let's move on.
And her last person she follows is Adam Adamowitz, who is a Bethesda person.
Yeah, as mentioned before, Bethesda, like, their concept artists are just, they're insane. I don't know how they think it up, but they do.
So, yeah, thank you for everybody who participated, and thank you again for that topic. Now, how can they find you, Roberto?
We reached the end of the show, but we're not even an hour done.
It's all right.
Ah.
It's all right. There's only two of us. How can they find you?
Really? Let's talk about the food we ate as a topic. I'm just kidding.
No, come on. Okay. How can they find you?
How can they find me? All right. So, all right, ladies and gentlemen, you can find me on Twitter at Jehuty88, Jehuty88. As you recall, there was actually a group post about that particular game and that orbital frame. That's the game, Zone of the Ender, Second Runner, Mars. It's a third. I'll see if I can try and pick it up at some point because it's $30 and I'm backlogged. But yes, that's the game I was talking about all this time. So that's where the Twitter handle comes from. Moving forward, Major Sloth 1988, Instagram. Major Sloth, Snapchat. Facebook, Roberto Rob Nice Nieves. PlayStation Network ID, VectorMan88. And you can find me on contributing to the other two sites, StackUp.org, Military Gaming Charity. We are always looking for volunteers, contributors, writers, and even streamers. Please feel free to join us on this important mission to help out veterans across the world through the power of video games. Also, But Why Though PC, it's a podcast that asks that biggest question, why? Why are so many of these pop culture things important to us? Why is Captain Marvel so important to us? Why is it relevant? Why is Black Panther relevant? Why is even anime such as Outlaw Stars relevant? So something really cool to check out there. And, we can't do friend codes on Nintendo. But, yeah, I have a Nintendo Switch too, and I'm sure we can try and figure out something about that if anyone wants to join me for something, like Paladins. And that's it. What about you, Kalai?
Before we get into me, you can find Matt at Missed Enough on all social medias. That's MISTAHNUFF. Then you can find me on Steam at Kalai21. You can find me on the Xbox at Miley, MAILE. 21. You can find me on PlayStation at Miley1978, though I've been playing a lot more PC. You can find me on social media, Twitter at Kalai21, and of course the GameStuff Twitter handle if you would like. Or you can hang out with me in the Facebook group. We do have some sponsors. Just go to provengamer.com, click on that Amazon link, and do your shopping like normal. It does help out the site and it doesn't cost you any money. We also have partnered with Humble Bundle to support the Extra Life charity for the children. There's a link in our show notes and you can go check out the deals that they're having over there for some PC games and sometimes PS4 games, and we'll let you know in our group. Also, we have other shows. If you like our show, we have the Trophy Whores and the Nintendo Dual Screens, so go ahead and check them out. I would like to thank some people that has helped us out on the show. Isaac Sago. You can find them at isaacsego.carbonmade.com. And the band Take Away the Ugly. You can find them on Bandcamp. And I put links in our show notes. So thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you on the next episode of Game Stuff.
Make it a great week, everybody. And keep on playing games everywhere, every time, anywhere. Have a good one, guys. See you next week.